Okay, please turn to page 56. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Would anyone like a notebook, by the way? Mind taking around? Okay. Thank you. So we're reading from chapter 1, text 3 this morning. Why don't we do the word for word in unison and then we'll chant the verse, shall we? Nigama, the Vedic literatures. Kalpa Toror, the desire tree. Galitam, fully matured. Palam, fruit. Shuka, Srila Shukadev Goswami, the original speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam. Mukhat, from the lips of. Amrita, nectar. Drava, and soft, and therefore easily swallowable. Samyutam, perfect in all respects. Pibata, do relish it. Bhagavatam, the book dealing in the science of the eternal relation with the Lord. Rasam, juice, that which is relishable. Alayam, unto liberation, or even in a liberated condition. Nkalu, always. Aho, o, rasikaha, those who are full in the knowledge of mellows. Mbuvi, on the earth. Bhavuka, expert and thoughtful. Nigama kapataro galitam palam. Shuka mukad amrita drava samyutam. Pibata bhagavatam rasam alayam. Mahur aho rasika bhuvi bhavuka.
Kapataro Galitam Palam Translation. O expert and thoughtful men and women, relish Srimad Bhagavatam, the mature fruit of the desire tree of Vedic literatures. It emanated from the lips of Sukadev Goswami, Sri Sukadev Goswami. Therefore, this fruit has become even more tasteful, although its nectarine juice was already relishable for all, including liberated souls. Purport. In the two previous shlokas, it has been definitely proved that the Srimad Bhagavatam is the sublime literature which surpasses all other Vedic scriptures due to its transcendental qualities. It is transcendental to all mundane activities and mundane knowledge. In this shloka, it is stated that Srimad Bhagavatam is not only a superior literature, but is the ripened fruit of all Vedic literatures. In other words, it is the cream of all Vedic literature. Considering all this, patient and submissive hearing is definitely essential. With great respect and attention, one should receive the message and lessons imparted by the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Vedas are compared to the desire tree because they contain all things knowable by man. They deal with mundane necessities as well as spiritual realization. The Vedas contain regulated principles of knowledge covering social, political, religious, economic, military, medicinal, chemical, physical, and metaphysical subject matter, and all that may be necessary to keep the body and the soul together. Above and beyond all this are specific directions for spiritual realization. Regulated knowledge involves a gradual raising of the living entity to the spiritual platform, and the highest spiritual realization is knowledge that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the reservoir of all spiritual tastes or rasas. Every living entity, beginning from Brahma, the firstborn living being within this material world, down to the insignificant ant, desires to relish some sort of taste derived from sense perceptions. These sensual pleasures are technically called rasas. Such rasas are of different varieties. In the revealed scriptures, the following 12 varieties of rasas are enumerated. 1. Raudra, anger. 2. Adbhuta, wonder. 3. Shringara, conjugal love. 4. Hasya, comedy. 5. Vira, chivalry. 6. Daya, mercy. 7. Dasya, servitorship. 8. Sakya, fraternity. 9. Bayanika, horror. 10. Bibhatsa, shock. And 11. Shanta, neutrality. 12. Vatsalya, parenthood. The sum total of all these rasas is called affection or love. Primarily, such signs of love are manifested in adoration, service, friendship, parental affection, and conjugal love. And when these five are absent, love is present indirectly in anger, wonder, comedy, chivalry, fear, shock, and so on. For example, when a man is in love with a woman, the rasa is called conjugal love. But when such love affairs are disturbed, there may be wonder, anger, shock, or even horror. Sometimes love affairs between two persons culminate in ghastly murder scenes. Such rasas are displayed between man and man and between animal and animal. There is no possibility of an exchange or rasa between a man and an animal or between a man and any other species of living being within the material world. The rasas are exchanged between members of the same species. But as far as the spirit souls are concerned, they are one qualitatively with the Supreme Lord. Therefore, the rasas were originally exchanged between the spiritual living being and the spiritual whole, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The supreme exchange, or rasa, is fully exhibited in spiritual existence between living beings and the Supreme Lord. Although there are many very important points in this purport, and it continues quite some time, the topic for today is rasa. And rasa is not a very easy thing to discuss. It's a very esoteric concept, which is very integral to our spiritual understanding, but practically absent in most other spiritual practices or forms of religion. So what is rasa anyway? We talk about it here as the word taste, or sometimes Prabhupada uses the word juice, rasa, juice, the flavor of a relationship. To begin with, rasa starts, spiritual rasa, that is, starts with the living entity has no material interest. So we should understand that although we may talk, thumbs down. although we should consider that there are relationships, certainly even in the mundane world, when we're talking about spiritual rasa, or rasa with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everybody that's allowed to enter into that relationship has already come to the level of not having any personal interest. So that's why sometimes Prabhupada says perfect, more perfect, most perfect. Because when we consider that everybody who has any rasa is automatically at the stage where they realize they're not that body and that they have no personal desire. So that already puts them on a kind of high level, right? So we say already they've reached perfection in one sense of the word. And then from perfection, we go into different categories. So I told you last week that I'm reading the Brihat Bhagavatamrita by Sanatana Goswami. And Brihat Bhagavatamrita, especially the second and third volumes of that book, are very much dedicated to discussing rasa, very much dedicated to explaining rasa. And so now I'm entering into Prema Bhakti Rasa. And, or I should say Gopakumar is entering into Prema Bhakti Rasa, and I'm entering into trying to understand what they're talking about. but the realization, the conversation begins because Maharaj Parikit's mother, Uttara, she says to Maharaj Parikit, it is said, some people say that there are higher and lower rasas. Even here, Prabhupada mentions there are primary, secondary rasas. And amongst the primary rasas, there are five. And then there's the topmost rasa, which is conjugal. And then next is parental. And next is vatsalya. And next is servitorship. And the last is passive relationship. So we may think, well, that means that I have to go for the highest, because that's where we're acclimated in that way, right? That we always want to go for the highest. And certainly in our sampradaya, those affiliated with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who have the fortune of connection with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are eligible to enter into the highest rasa or the highest rasas of spiritual relationship. But it also should be understood that any relationship or any opportunity to having a loving relationship with Krishna is an extremely exalted position. And the residents of Vaikuntha, or the beings in Vaikuntha, those living entities who make it past the material world, who make it past material desire, who make it up to the understanding of their spiritual nature and their loving relationship with Krishna, they're already very exalted personalities. And from our position to say higher and lower to them is kind of an oxymoron. So we have to understand that first. And it's difficult for us to understand, perhaps, because we're so used to competing and so used to considering that something is higher and something is lower. Who wants to be lower? I may have mentioned to you once before that I had the good fortune of accidentally being present at the end of a World Cup game. But I was there because I was at my son's house and he had it on the television set. So neither of us were really watching it. The game was over. And someone was kind of wandering around the stadium or whatever it was with a camera. And there was no talking. It was just a camera kind of wandering around picking up shots. And I don't think the people that were being filmed really knew they were being filmed. So France and Italy won. And the boys are remembering which game it is, right? So Italy won, and they were going around hugging each other and going through this whole thing, you know, congratulating Haribo. They were so happy. And the French were kind of miserable. They were pretty depressed. And they were more than depressed. They were actually kind of angry. And then all of a sudden, this line formed, and I didn't know what was going on. My son explained to me that they were about to get their medals. So one was getting gold medals, and one was getting silver medals. And getting a silver medal is no small thing. Even being in the World Cup game is no small thing. You have to work very hard to get there, practice, train. It's a big deal. But the French didn't come in first. And so they weren't seeing, this is a great thing that I've reached this far, that I came here. You know, they were seeing, we lost. So what you saw on the camera was that as these people got their medals, the Italians were going over to the French and trying to give them a hug or shake their hand, and the French were actually avoiding their contact, looking down at the floor. Even one of them took the medal that he received and threw it on the floor and stepped on it. So we can't look at Rasa in the spiritual world with that kind of mood, that if I don't make it to Vatsalya, if I can't, I'm going to take my toys and go home. Because you're already home. Spiritual world, you're already home. And by the time you've gotten to that level where you can consider rasa, you've already become free from any kind of envy, any kind of consideration that there's anything more perfect for you than your relationship with Krishna, whatever that is. So Uttara, when she's talking to Parikshit, she's saying, I don't get it. And Uttara is a pretty advanced devotee. I mean, she did talk to Krishna. She said, Pahi Pahi Mahayogin, you know, save me. There's a Brahmastra coming at my womb, and I'm carrying the only living heir to the Pandava dynasty. And Krishna entered into her womb and saved Parikshit from the death by the Brahmastra. So she's not just any Joe Blow, you know. But still, she said to Parikshit, I don't understand. It seems to me that the people in the highest rasa, they should have privileges that the other rasas don't have. And yet you say that everybody is situated, the Bhagavatam says, that everybody is situated in rasa. They're automatically completely happy with wherever they are. So I don't get it. It seems like the people that are in the lower rasas should be aspiring for the higher rasas, and there's no aspiration there. What's going on? So in answer to her question, Maharaj Parikshit speaks this Brihad Bhagavatamrita and narrates the story of Gopakumar. And Gopakumar very in detail describes each of the rasas. He goes through very many different levels of spiritual advancement and ultimately comes to the level of the highest relationship with Krishna. And as he progresses up through the material layers, through the Varoja, through the Brahmajyoti, into Vaikuntha, each group of people he meets tries to convince him to stay there. This place is great. There's nothing better than this place. Here we are in Vaikuntha, we're in Dasyaras, this is the greatest place. You should just hang out here with us. Just get rid of those cowherd boy clothes that you're wearing. They're kind of dirty anyway. And get your form. You could pick it up over there at the desk. And come with us and stay here in Vaikuntha. And then again, he goes from Vaikuntha and he goes to Ayodhya. He goes from Ayodhya, he goes to Dwarka. where Dwarka has some parental and some conjugal, but it's mixed a little bit with awe and reverence. So the taste is not quite as high as Goloka Vrindavan. For us, it's inconceivable. So this element of respect, awe, and reverence is what minimizes the level of ecstasy. But the level of ecstasy is already at the maximum, and yet it gets minimized by awe and reverence. Now, how do we get that, right? So if you look in your own life, you'll see that you have different relationships with people, and the people that you have the most intimacy, the people who can have the most impact on your life, are the people you're most familiar with and that are most familiar with you. The high court judge, when you go into the judge's quarters, you're very, have great awe and reverence. Shesha Prabhu told a story in one Bhagavatam class about how when he first had his first court case in federal court, Shesha Prabhu was a lawyer, in case you didn't know that. So he had his first day in court, and he was before this high court justice in the federal court, and he was so scared. He said he had such a amazingly in reverence idea of what this court was like and what this justice was like. And he started to present his case, and he used the word we, meaning him and his client. And the justice he said it seemed like she was 30 feet up and he was underground. And he was looking it up on her, and she said, "Excuse me, but who is we?" And that question paralyzed him. He couldn't answer. He was a lawyer. It was his first case, and he didn't know who his client was. He couldn't tell the judge who his client was. He couldn't articulate the words because he was so overwhelmed by awe and fear that he was dumbfounded. He couldn't say. So finally, his client had to say whatever the name of the organization was he was representing. And he was mortified by that experience. But he explained that later on in his career, he was invited to a gathering of justices and lawyers, and that same justice who had, he felt, humiliated him publicly was there. And he was somehow organized in his seating to sit at the table with this person. And in his mind, he had kind of demonized this person. He had kind of thought she deliberately humiliated him. But when they were at the table, and now they were equals, they were just kind of being friends, he actually developed a very nice relationship with this justice. And they maintained that relationship up until the present day. And he said that this person had actually helped him out many times in his practice, in his development as a lawyer. So this awe and reverence, it's a good thing on some level, but it also gets in the way of relationship. In order to have an intimate relationship, a very intimate relationship, the most intimate relationship, awe and reverence has to be gone. So we see, even between Rohini, the mother of, Devaki, one of the mothers of Krishna, and Jasoda, right? They're both his mother. But Devaki has more awe and reverence than Jasoda does. Jasoda's in Goloka Vrindavan, or Gokula Vrindavan, and she just thinks of Krishna as her little boy. She thinks of him as a loving relationship with him. She doesn't have awe and reverence for him. She sees him as someone she needs to take care of. And she's completely dedicated to his care. Whereas Devaki has a touch of awe and reverence because she saw him with four arms and, you know, so many things. And even Vasudev, he sometimes says, "It's ridiculous that I consider you my son. How can I consider you my son? You're the Supreme Personality of Godhead." But Nanda and Jasoda, they think, "Oh, you say he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but you just don't know that he's my son. What do you mean, Supreme Personality of Godhead? What are you talking about?" So This absence of awe is what differentiates the different rasas and makes them sweeter and sweeter and sweeter. And perhaps using the word sweeter makes it more genuine an understanding than saying higher and higher and higher. Because it's really, you're at the higher when you enter into rasa. By the time you get into the level of rasa, you're already higher. But it gets sweeter and sweeter and sweeter as the awe and reverence barometer goes down. So the highest rasa is the intimacy of a lover who has no other desire than to serve Krishna. None. No other desire. Everything that everyone does who has a rasa with Krishna is simply for his pleasure. So in Vaikuntha, I learned in Bhakti, in Brihat Bhagavatamrita, that living entities take on the form of their worshipable deity, so that those who worship korma, if they get swarupya siddhi, or the liberation of having the same form as the Lord, they come as turtles. Because their loving relationship with Krishna is they were a korma, they were a turtle, a tortoise. And Krishna got pleasure from their tortoiseness. And so they know that that gave Krishna pleasure, so they come in that form. And they continue to give him pleasure in that form. And all the other, if I worship Ram, then I take on a kind of Kshatriya or Kshatriya of chivalrous form. And I could be a human being, because Ram was a human being. So I take on that form, and I serve him in that form, because Ram is happy when I serve him in that form. Or I could be a monkey, because Hanuman gave Ram pleasure as being a monkey. So there's no ulterior motive. The only motive is that I'm giving pleasure. And that's why there's no inebriety in the material, in the spiritual world. Because everybody is just thinking, how can I give pleasure to Krishna? Not how can I give pleasure to me? The French in the World Cup issue were thinking, I didn't get the highest position. This didn't give me profit, adoration, and distinction sufficient. They got more profit, adoration, and distinction than I did. But that thought process is absent in the spiritual world. Everyone is just thinking, how can I serve Krishna? So the gopis who have the highest, we say, or the sweetest relationship with Krishna, their qualification is that their thought of giving the most pleasure to Krishna allows them to make the greatest sacrifice. They'll sacrifice everything, their mind, their body, their words, everything in Krishna's pleasure. Everything they do for Krishna's pleasure. And then the parental relationship, also everything for Krishna's pleasure, but they have some role to play as being a parent. And then there's the friends. And the friends also are divided. We have Arjuna, who's a friend. We have Uddhava, who's a friend. And we have Subalsaka, who's a friend. And the degree of reverence, Arjuna was reverent, right? When he saw the universal form, he got nervous. He said, oh my gosh, I was too friendly with you. I sat on the same bed. We choked together. We talked together. I blew it. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. I was too friendly with you. Because that awe entered into the relationship, and it kind of made a distance there. And then Uddhava, he's in Dwarka. He's Krishna's minister. So he also has a kind of an awe and reverence. He has to bow down when Krishna comes into the assembly. He has to give him advice. Actually, even Krishna has some awe for Uddhava here, because he reciprocates with that relationship. And he hears from him advice. And then there's the friends of Krishna who just play with Krishna, and they don't think of Krishna as God. They don't think of him as God. They think of him as their most lovable friend. Their most lovable friend. Let's play ball. Let's put a flower in Krishna's mouth instead of a sweet. And let's see the fun. Let's play keep away. Let's grab his lunch and throw it so he'll run and get it. And then run again and get it. And then run again and get it. let's play different games with Krishna. And when Krishna jumps on Kaliya, we're going to be scared. We feel fear because Krishna is in danger. Krishna is in danger. How can Krishna be in danger? He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But I'm not thinking that way. Mother Jasoda's not thinking that way. The cowherd boys, they're not thinking that way. They're thinking Krishna's in danger. Kali is going to hurt him. Putana is going to hurt him. I have to protect him. Let me chant some mantras. Let me pray to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What's wrong with that picture? So that absence of awe and that complete absorption in just worrying about Krishna's pleasure is what allows these rasas to develop. So in this verse, it says that this Bhagavatam was spoken in maturity. It says, it emanated from the lips of Sukadeva, what is it? O expert of thoughtful man, relish Srimad Bhagavatam, the mature fruit of the desire tree of Vedic literature. So mature means it's the sweetest. It's the sweetest. It's reached its maximum capacity for being sweet, right? When fruit is ripe, it's the sweetest. When it's not ripe, it's dry or bitter, depending, or it has no taste. Tastes like styrofoam. If you ever got a peach that wasn't really mature, they pick it early and then they let it get rotten, and so you think it's soft and ripe, but when you eat it, it tastes like styrofoam. It has no flavor. So, but when the fruit is really ripe, then it's sweetest. So the relationship with Krishna in the loving relationships of his devotees is the sweetest to the degree that the awe and reverence is gone. So when you have the passive relationship, there is really no opportunity for exchange. I just adore Krishna. The cows, right? There's some reciprocation, but it's very minor. The cows can't eat lunch with Krishna and play with Krishna, although they do get some reciprocation with Krishna and they give some reciprocation with Krishna. But it's not an active equal relationship in any way. And then the servitor relationship has, I have a responsibility and I have to do my service, but I can't go beyond my service to have a friendship with Krishna. I do my service and I want to please Krishna and I try to please Krishna, but I can't enter into Krishna's pastimes without permission. So there's a touch of awe there. There's a little bit of reverence there that keeps me from being as intimate as the next level, which is the friends of Krishna. And like I said before, there are levels of friends. Some of them have more awe. Say that 10 times fast. And they're a little distant. And then as the awe goes away, they become intimate friends with Krishna. So much so that they can wrestle with him and they can win. They can beat him in a game and they can climb on his shoulders and he has to carry them, right? So they don't have to think, oh, we have to let Krishna win. We can't win because he's God. No. They think he's our friend and we're going to play and let the best man win, right? And if the best man's me, then I'm going to win. That's all. So the awe goes away more. And then the parents of Krishna, it shifts on the other side, that I have to take care of Krishna. Krishna might actually be in danger. He won't be able to eat without me. If I don't feed him, he'll starve. Mother Jasoda, when Krishna would go out to the pasturing grounds, she would keep calling him back over and over again. You sure you have enough food? I made an extra sweet. You could take an extra sweet. And then he'd start to go, and she'd say, wait a minute, come back just one time. You sure you have sufficient, your feet are not going to get hurt? You sure you're okay? Yeah, Mom, I'm okay. So he'd leave. And then she'd call him back again. How about one more package of
of Krishna surprise rice with fruit, because you might get hungry in between meals, and you might have enough, and you want to share it with your friends. So come back here and let me give you another one. Okay, Mom, okay. And the boys are outside going, come on, Krishna, let's go. It's time to go. And she's saying, no, stay here, because she doesn't want to even think of life without Krishna just for a few minutes or just for a few hours. Just those few hours when Krishna is in the pasture make her so upset because he's not there. And she's worried about him. You see that with your own parents sometimes, especially with a little child, right? A little child, you know they're dependent. You don't want us out of your sight for a minute. Where is he? Where are they? You know, you're always looking, always checking, always making sure. And as you get older, right, you think, Mom, leave me alone. Right? I can handle it myself. But the mother never thinks that way. I have 40-year-old children that I'm still wondering, are they going to be all right? Do I have to call them and check in? How's it going? Mom, I'm 40 years old. I can handle it. But that relationship causes you to constantly think that the welfare of your charge is in your hands. So you have to take care. You have to take care. It's your responsibility. And then there's the relationship that goes beyond parent, the conjugal relationship, the Vidurya relationship, which is the sweetest relationship. And that relationship is one that my only existence is to do whatever, whatever. It's described by our acharyas that each of the relationships contains all the bhav, all the feelings of the ones before. So the parent relationship, the parent is a friend, the parent is a servant, the parent is an object for the child that climbs on, you're my horse, you know, or whatever. So all those relationships are in the parent relationship. So in the loving relationship, there's that sense that I have to take care of you. There's that sense that I'm your friend. There's that sense that I'm your servant. There's that sense that I'm an object for your enjoyment. And ultimately, whatever you need, I'm there. Whatever you need, I'm there. I'll take any situation and I'll make lemons into lemonade. I'll be there for you. No matter what you need, I'm there for you. That's the purpose of my life, the goal of my existence, is that I give you pleasure. The way I dress is for your pleasure. The words I say are for your pleasure. The food I cook is for your pleasure. The motivation for everything I do is for your pleasure. So those are the five primary rasas. And then within those rasas, when they slip to the background, the secondary rasas come forward, and I'm not going to spend too much time with them. We don't hear about them very much. But sometimes we hear that Radharani becomes angry, and even her anger is there to increase Krishna's pleasure. You know, you ever hear the expression, play hard to get? So sometimes Radharani plays hard to get, even though she's thinking all the time that all she wants to do is please Krishna. If it's too easy, Krishna may not be pleased, so she makes him go for it a little bit, just like Krishna makes the gopis go for it a little bit, right? Sometimes he disappears in the middle of the rasa dance, and then they go crazy looking for him, mad looking for him. So there's this constant exchange of sweetness. And this topic, or this understanding of rasa, is something which is extremely elevated and something we have to take time to understand. But at least we should understand that in our Krishna consciousness, we are looking for this deeply profound loving relationship with God. It's not that we see God as our order supplier, or we see God as some distant booming voice sitting on a big seat somewhere banging out orders, like Shesha Prabhu saw that judge in that high court situation. It's not like we see God as a light bulb. Sometimes you get these tracts and you see this person without a head and he's just got a light bulb on top of his shoulders. It's not like we see God as a force, because you can't have a loving relationship with a force. Prabhupada once said that when
when he was in Calcutta and there was the bombing in World War I, he was hearing the bombs drop and he was going, cheat bong, cheat bong, cheat bong. And he was saying, he was thinking, this is the Virat Rupa. And you can't love the Virat Rupa. You can't love the Virat Rupa. How do you love this multi-armed, fire-breathing, multi-headed, scary jaws, people's head being crushed between the teeth? How do you love that? Try making clothes. John Mastami outfit for the Virat Rupa. Right? How do you do it? You can't do it. So there, we are privileged by the mercy of Prabhupada, by the mercy of the Srimad Bhagavatam, by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we're privileged to understand that we can have a loving relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We can actually be His friend. We can actually be His lover. We can actually be His parent. Think of Him in that way. So intimate, so wonderful, so relishable. If you look at the cover or that picture, I talked about it last time, that picture of Gopakumar coming back to the spiritual world. And Krishna is giving him a hug. Right? Krishna is giving him a hug. And all the cowherd boys are there and all the cowherd girls are there. And they're like, where you been? We were in the middle of this game and you took off and did all this stuff. It took thousands of years, but to us it was just like a second. And now you're finally back and we're so glad you came back. Let's go. We're in the middle of a game. Start running. But if you meditate on that hug, just on that hug, just meditate on that hug of Krishna welcoming the spirit soul back to the spiritual world. He's so happy to see us that his eyes are closed and he's just saying, oh, I'm so glad you finally made it back. Prabhupada was like that with each of us. If any one of us would leave Prabhupada's service, Prabhupada would be praying, when will you come back? Some devotees would come back, Prabhupada would say, I've been simply praying to Krishna, when you will come back? When will you come back? So that relationship with the spiritual master is an opportunity to start to taste that relationship with the Supreme Personality of God, Godhead, to develop that loving exchange, at least on the parental level of the parent to the child, that we can look to our spiritual master for that loving exchange because he's giving us the most loving exchange of the relationship between the soul and God. And it's not a static thing. It's not just an awe and reverence thing. It's a deep, loving relationship that goes way beyond asking for a good grade on the test or giving me a good wife or getting me the vacation I always wanted or the money that I need in the bank. It goes way beyond that to a loving exchange with a person. And those of us who are from other traditions, we understand that not having that personal knowledge of the Supreme Godhead makes such a difference in our involvement in our spiritual life. Just not knowing who God is or what he's like. Prabhupada said, I can give you his address. I can give you his name. He probably now could give us his email. So God is there for us to have a loving relationship with him, and we should cultivate that. Not cultivate the relationship. We talk about sometimes the citadea, what is our eternal relationship, and someone whispers in your ear, you're a gopi, and then you think, wow, I'm a gopi, yay. But Prabhupada told us that by practicing Krishna consciousness, these things would become revealed to us. But at least we can understand that we do have some loving relationship with God. And whatever that relationship is with Krishna, we will be 100% satisfied when we find out what it is. We don't have to worry, oh, what if I don't make it and I'm not a gopi? I'm only a cowherd boy. How disappointing. We don't feel that way. When we get to the spiritual world, wherever we are very happy to be there. And we're the happiest because that's our eternal relationship with Krishna. So that we could aspire for. We could aspire for the knowledge or we could aspire for the understanding that we have a loving relationship with Krishna. And if we cultivate that, we'll be eternally satisfied in that loving exchange. So I'll stop there.
Thank you very much. Is there any questions? Yes. You have to talk loud. Or is there another microphone? There's barely this microphone. Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Once the jiva gets to, the jiva's eternal rasa, he stays there. But like in this story of Gopakumar, he goes through all the rasas before he gets to his, which is Cowherd Boy. So he passes through all the other ones. But he never quite feels satisfied. Everybody else is really satisfied, and they all say, come and join us, be here in Vaikuntha, be here in Ayodhya, be here in Dwarka. But he, in his heart, he's feeling, this is not where I belong, until he gets to his rasa. So when you get to, if you're asking, is there upward mobility? Not exactly. There's upward mobility until you get where you are. And then where you are, you don't want to go anywhere. You're perfectly satisfied. Is that okay? Okay. Yes. Yeah, you already have it, but you're not aware of it. You're already a spirit soul. But why do you act like a body? because you're not aware of your soulness. Periodically, you may become aware of your soulness, and in moments of, spiritual epiphany, you may become aware that you're a soul and that you have a loving relationship with God. But unfortunately, at least at the beginning, and I don't know where the beginning ends, then at least at the beginning, we forget, we flicker back and forth between remembering that we're a soul and we having a loving relationship with God and reverting to being a body, like when we stub our toe or when we get angry because we didn't get what we want or someone else stole the gulab jamun off our plate or whatever. So then we revert to bodiness and we keep flickering back and forth as we become more inclined to remembering or knowing that we're a soul, as our faith becomes fixed, as we stay more on this side than the material body side, then it becomes more and more clear to us and we start to act like a soul. And the more we act like a soul, the more our relationship with Krishna becomes in our awareness, because it's not in our bodily awareness. So we have to uncover the material desire. That's the first thing. That's why I said that at the beginning, that we have to get rid of all material desire before we can even understand rasa. We could talk about it here, but to really understand it, what to speak of taste it, we have to be free from the bitter taste of I, me, and mine. And as long as there's any tinge of I, me, and mine, we really can't enter into rasa, because the qualification for all the rasas, even the dasya rasa, is that I have no other desire than Krishna's pleasure. So if I have a desire for my pleasure, that is a barrier, and it has to be removed. Yes.